Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Hard Foul Sports Cleveland podcast. Tonight, it is the All Cavs edition. We did the All Browns edition earlier in the week with myself and Mike Tolsma. And now it's time for some positive Cleveland sports talk as we get to divulge into the inner workings of the 4-1 Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm Adam Bennett, joined by Evan Sally of Hard Foul Sports Buffalo. And if you haven't heard of Evan or know of Evan yet, he writes at hardfoulsports.com, and he's on the Buffalo podcast, so check him out there. And then, of course, Mike Arnold, who is my co-host for all of our Cleveland podcast, joining us as well. And guys, Mike, I want to start with you, the self-proclaimed basketball nerd. Cavs are 4-1. You know, I thought they had a great win at Memphis. I thought they played very well in the home opener. And their win against the Heat, obviously the loss to start the year to the Bulls. And then what do you make of this whole two games in a row now, Philadelphia and the Knicks? They give up 32 points in the first quarter of both games, but then they turn around and play lockdown defense for three quarters and get the two wins. Is that an effort thing? Is that a roster thing? Are they getting used to each other? Is it coaching? What are your thoughts?
I think it's an effort thing. The one thing I've noticed, and it's the same with LeBron's Heat teams, and it's the same, and it was the same last year. It's when these teams turn it, or when they want to, they just turn it on, and they're so good. I mean, the Cavs still, even after the bad two first quarters, these last couple games, they're still one of the only five teams in the league with a top 10 offense and defense rating. I mean, they're 4-1. They're moving the ball better than they ever did last year. And we're missing three of our best six players. It's just so good right now. I'm so happy to be a Cavs fan.
Well, I'll tell you what, and Evan, we'll bring you in here. First of all, a disclaimer, and a lot of people aren't going to like this.
Oh, man.
But I can vouch for Evan as a person. Evan is the guy that we all have learned to hate on Twitter. Evan is the, I'm a LeBron fan. I'm not really, he's a Cavs fan, but he's a LeBron fan. So when LeBron went to Miami, Evan, followed LeBron there, which is okay. That's his right as a fan. So it brings a new perspective in. And Evan, one of the things I want to ask you is Mike and I before the year, and we talked about this in our preview podcast, we're huge fans of David Blatt. And we keep telling ourselves and the Cavs and anybody that will listen, if the Cavs just allow Blatt to coach the offense, and if they really embrace what he's going to run, we'll be one of the most efficient teams in the NBA. And, of course, LeBron, a lot of times, he'll take over the play calling, which is LeBron's right, too, is the best player in the world. But have you noticed a difference as the casual LeBron fan from the way the Cavs played offense last year, where it was kind of a spreading out, high screen and roll, everybody just try to make an individual play, to what you've seen through the first five games this year?
Well, it's what you saw last year and what you saw at the end of last season was how they were able to incorporate all three superstars into their offense and be more of like, yeah, the high pick and roll, like you said, and then you're able to activate your offense from there, and you have multiple options for either Kyrie or LeBron, whoever the primary ball handler is, to pass the ball off. This year, because Kyrie's not there, LeBron's definitely doing a lot more of the ball handling, and you're adding Mo Williams in, who is, his ability to, shoot the ball off the dribble, and he's able to activate the offense, but he's definitely more of a, he's a score-first point guard as well. The offense is, it seems like they're relying more on the fluidity of the offense, where they're trying to just move the ball around, switch the ball from side to side and exploit matchups. And I think that's the best way to score right now without Kyrie, without JR, without Shumpert, without your full complement of guys. Even guys like Varejao are still working themselves back. Mozgov working himself in shape, like, to be able to swing the ball around and kind of take advantage of matchups. That's definitely the ideal way right now to score the ball, because right now with LeBron and his back issues, you don't want to have him constantly worried about playing one-on-one, or he's playing up top and initiating the offense all the time. You want to be able to kind of spread out and you know, delegate the offensive duties around, and this is the best way to do it. So, your point about Blatt, though, I think a lot of the perception of coaches it goes into like almost a lot into the way they look, honestly. And I think David Blatt, kind of a goofy looking dude, so people instinctively are willing to pounce that the second he slips, the second he, you know, references his coaching job in Israel, and they're, you know, like, what are you talking about? This is the NBA. Man, this guy is a coaching professional. He's a very, very good coach. That Princeton offense they were running last year in their preseason, and then, of course, they kind of fell off when LeBron, you know, took control of things. But the man knows what he's doing. And I totally agree with you about, I mean, just let the man coach. But he's got to walk that very tight rope with LeBron because he doesn't want to anger LeBron because that's, I mean, he's the franchise, of course.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Blatt. And, Arnie, I'll turn back to you because You know, Mike and I both love him, and here's why I love him. I've never really explained why I'm a believer in Blatt. Two things. Number one, I'm a huge believer in Adrian Wojnarowski from Yahoo Sports.
And he's on his own.
Woj, I've actually had the opportunity to meet Woj a couple times. He went to graduated from St. Bonaventure, which is, of course, where I broadcast and work. And Woj said when they hired Blatt, and, of course, this is before we knew LeBron was coming back. He vouched for Blatt and said he is one of the most innovative and best head coaches in the world. And he called him the Greg Popovich of the NBA overseas. And, you know, Blatt gets a raw deal. And I know he went through all that stuff with the timeout situation in the playoffs last year. He tried calling timeout when we didn't have any, and it very well could have lost us the game. He's under so much pressure here. To win a title right away with a team that he didn't expect to have. He never expected LeBron to come back, and obviously that's a great problem to have. But when he comes to Cleveland, all right, everybody names him a rookie head coach, and, it's going to take him a while to learn. This is the NBA. It's so much different than overseas. And at the end of the day, you know, the rules are different. Managing a season is different. You know, deciding how you want to practice and when you want to practice and when to put your foot on the gas and when to put your foot on the brake, all that stuff is much, much different than in Europe. And the game is played in a lot different ways, but that man can flat out coach. And Arnie, I know you feel the same way about him. You, in fact, in your Twitter bio, you're a David Blatt disciple. what do you think? Yeah. I mean, and this goes back to what you just said. We have three of our six best players have been out, and we're playing Mo Williams and Richard Jefferson considerable minutes, but we're winning games without having to rely on LeBron, you know, playing every minute of every game and taking every shot, or without having to rely on just LeBron or Kevin Love taking shots. That is a function of coaching, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. And you look at the game last night, you know, whether it's the sleeves or whatever it was, but LeBron and Kevin Love weren't hitting shots, and we were able to fight our way back with good defense and patient offense. One thing I love about Blatt is his press conferences. The comments he makes to, like, reporters who try and treat him like he's some, you know, no-name who, like, I remember when they asked him, oh, you know, are you excited to coach in front of the president? He's like, yeah, you know, I've coached in front of world leaders in other countries before. It's really not that big of a deal to me. It's things like that he does. I love his defensive schemes are, I mean, obviously showing right now with a team that, you know, everyone says Kevin Love can't play defense, which I think he's a little better than people say he is, but I mean, he's it's not why he's on the floor. And Mo Williams can't guard anyone, and we're still holding, you know, teams to, I want close to low 90, or I want to say low 90s points per game. I mean, it's incredible to watch.
Yeah, the field goal percentage is hovering around 42. And Evan, this is something, you know, you're a LeBron follower, and you told us before the podcast you've liked him since his junior year in high school. My one problem with LeBron, and of course, I preface this by saying I love LeBron. I'm thankful that LeBron came back.
I was about to say, watch it, man. Yeah. Hold on, jeez.
I appreciate LeBron trying to get our city and our region a title. And do what he can for Northeast Ohio. But my one problem with LeBron is, you know, even going back to the days of Mike Brown. Now, I can understand this because Mike Brown was a horrible coach. But LeBron had big problems with Mike Brown. And then he goes to Miami, and he had big problems with Eric Spoelstra. And, you know, the passive aggressiveness, their first year, you know, LeBron's bumping into him on the sidelines and holding Spoelstra back and, you know, doing all those things. And I know, you know, you go through this process that, you know, you have to gain LeBron's trust as a coach. And, you know, LeBron really doesn't, you know, he doesn't owe you anything. You owe him a lot in his eyes. And part of that's true being the best player on the planet. But I want to focus that on Blatt a little bit because I think one of the things that people underrate the most about David Blatt is the fact that, you know, he does have a large ego, and he should, because he's accomplished everything that you can accomplish overseas. And he's had 20-some years of coaching at a really high level and doing a really, really good job. If you dive into his resume over there, he's one of the most successful coaches in history. So he comes over here, and some people with his ego would immediately clash with LeBron, and all of a sudden every ounce of passive aggressiveness that LeBron was throwing his way last year, he could have thrown right back. You know, it could have been a big power struggle. But I think what people underrate is Blatt understands for the team to win and the team to be the best and for him to do the best that he can do as a coach and for the city of Cleveland to get a title, they have to get along. And I give a lot more credit to Blatt, and this is where I want to bring you in because I want your opinion as a LeBron fan, watching everything that happened unfold. I think LeBron treated him like absolute garbage last year. And I give credit to Blatt in the way that he responded and reacted to that. Did you see that same treatment, or was that just kind of typical of what you've seen over LeBron over the years?
No, I agree. And what the way LeBron was treating him, especially if you saw like a lot of the timeout huddles, he'd be paying no attention to whatever Blatt's drawn up. You know, the whole idea that Tyronn Lue is really the head coach, yeah, and it's not Blatt, that LeBron respects him more. And, you know, I think a lot of that can get blown out of proportion because we're only seeing a certain side of it from whatever the camera's showing us. But no doubt, I mean, there's definitely a case of if there's smoke, there's fire. And I tend to believe that, even though what you were saying about, you know, how Blatt does deserve respect because of everything he's done in his career, in LeBron's mind, that's just he's about the NBA. He never played college ball. He's not he ever considered going over to Europe. Like, it's just about the NBA. So until you prove yourself in his eyes, then he's just not, you know, maybe should he treat you with more respect? Sure, he's not gonna, you know, blatantly start screaming at you on the sideline. But it's a weird dynamic, like I was saying before. I mean, and Blatt knows that he needed to kind of sublimate his ego a little bit, or else that's a death sentence for his coaching job. Now they've gone through some wars together. They got to the finals. Blatt, with his defensive adjustments, was able to slow down the Warriors, and they were almost able to pull out, you know, of a miracle of a series win. I think that dynamic should start to change, and especially as LeBron ages. And you know, he still does incredible things, but it's just not as consistent as we're used to before, and that the back thing is an issue. So I think we'll start to see him lean on Blatt a little bit more throughout the season, and I think that relationship is going to improve kind of because it has to. That, you know, there's them working together and working together well is the key to this team winning a championship.
Arnie, I want to go back to you for a second. You know, before we talk about what's going on in the Western Conference and how petrified we are of a certain team out there right now, I want to dive into this Cavs team. 4-1. You know, we talked about the wins over the Knicks and the Sixers. Thought they played very well at Memphis. But if you're looking at the Cavs and let's say you're an opposing coach, and be it right now without Kyrie and Shumpert, or, you know, down the line once everybody's healthy, what do you think is our biggest weakness moving forward, and what do we have to really, you know, concern ourselves with that's, you know, our biggest obstacle between us and winning a title?
And I'm going to say that I'm not trying to hate right now, because whenever I bring this up to people, they just tell me that's all I'm doing. It's LeBron shooting. He gets in just modes where he just wants to shoot jumpers. And, I mean, going into the game yesterday, he was 1 of 15 from 3 and didn't help himself. I mean, he hit one, so I guess that did help him. But I mean, it's just brutal to watch. And he had Jose Calderon, who might be the worst defensive point guard in the NBA, switched on him in a pick and roller in the game. And he takes a jumper with his feet on the three-point line. It's just like, why don't you just take it and shove it down his throat? Like, you know he can't stop you. Yeah. You know, what's the point of that? And you know, he hit off the back iron. This is pre-LeBron ripped his sleeves at ESPN. I'm sure spent a half hour dissecting on SportsCenter today.
They did.
Yeah, I can't watch that anymore. But, I mean, it's. I think when he gets in the mode where he wants to just kind of shoot jumpers and gets lazy, doesn't want to move the ball and wants to keep, you know, just, I don't know if he's trying to prove something or what's going on, but he really needs to either fix his shot, because it's been like this since the end of last year, or I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it'll change a little bit when Kyrie comes back, but it's our biggest weakness right now, because we're playing great defense. Even our bench, like, I thought our bench units would get killed, and they're playing great defense. Outback Jesus is leading the charge there. He's having a great season so far. He's a lot better than he was last year offensively. I think we're in great shape outside of that.
By the way, just before you go real quick, Evan, I just want to say, I know that on some of these podcasts we've had people from the Browns listen along. If anybody from the Cavs is listening to this, please send Mike Arnold a signed Matty Dellavedova jersey, a signed photo, because Mike has, I mean, look, I give Mike so much credit. Mike and I have known each other for a few years, and he called Delly earlier than anybody else did, way before it was cool. And in fact, when Delly was getting crushed by a lot of people earlier last year, you know, Mike was there saying, hey, he's going to be good. He's going to be a great player. You just watch. And then, of course, he has the playoffs that he does, and everybody jumps on the Delly bandwagon. But Mike Arnold started that bandwagon, so if you're listening from the Cavs, I'll get you his address or whatever. We'll get him a signed Delly jersey. Go ahead, Evan.
Yeah, that's great. I love Delly too, and he's playing fantastic this year. But Mike, on your point about LeBron, I think that's definitely an interesting one. And I think to piggyback on that a bit, it's with his shooting, and the shooting issues were there last year, so it's not completely all of this. But I think the back issue is definitely a major concern for this team. And that's where I think you're seeing a lot of the plays that you would call lazy, a lot of the, what are you doing? Just take someone in the low post and destroy them, just drive to the hole, just be more aggressive. And I think he's really trying to pick and choose his spots here a little bit. And it shows, you know, here and there when he's being guarded by Jose Calderon and he's not taking him to the hole. So to me, that's the biggest issue. And I'm a little worried about how that's going to go throughout the season. And I think that also goes along with the fact that this is a guy who's made six finals in a row. Going for a sixth final in a row. And the regular season, the first five, six games of regular season, I don't think it interests him all that much. Obviously, he's an extreme competitor, but his eyes are on the prize. He knows how important that, you know, those 2 months in, you know, you got April, you got May in the playoffs, and you get to the finals in June. That's what the season's all about. He knows this team. You know, as long as he plays fairly well and everyone gets back and they get healthy enough, they're going to sleepwalk their way to 51 to 55 wins to get the 1 or 2 seed in the East, and then the real season begins in the playoffs. So I do wonder that if the execution, that's where I think Black comes in as well, like trying to keep LeBron focused and try to keep this team focused, because it's all about the playoffs, and what you do in the regular season obviously builds up to that, but it's about that ultimate goal and about making sure you're in the right form once the playoffs come around.
You know, I'll give him that. And I've got my issues with LeBron, and my issues with LeBron are more from an attitude standpoint. But, you know, from his game, I think you're right, Evan. I think a lot of this is early in the year. You know, he's on the treadmill, so to speak, right now. And, you know, he wants to take it at a nice, easy pace moving forward, and, you know, Blatt is doing a good job being careful with his minutes, and everything's trying to preserve him to the playoffs. But at the same time, I mean, to Mike's point, he goes in these stretches, and you know, he did this in the playoffs last year, but to me, he did it in the playoffs last year because he had to. You know, there was nobody else that was going to be that perimeter mid-range option that we needed, and Golden State plays the type of defense that LeBron understood. You know, it doesn't matter how many times I go to the basket, they can double or triple team me inside, and they're still good enough rotationally to get to some of our guys where they're not going to have open catch and shoots. So, you know, LeBron, and I think Blatt signed on to it, said, look, you gotta shoot it as much as you can. And you listen to the people that know LeBron, the Brian Windhorses and the Zach Jacksons and the Andre Knotts, that are all kind of from that Akron area, they all say the same thing. LeBron is embarrassed by a lack of efficiency. And so when he puts up those big shooting numbers, you know, we all kind of made fun of him a little bit last year and said, this is ridiculous. He's shooting like 30-whatever percent. The one person that's the most upset about that is LeBron at the end of the day. He values efficiency. And so, you know, I do agree with Mike in the sense that he's settling for the perimeter jumper a lot more early in the year than I'd like to see him do. And again, when everybody's healthy, I long to see the lineups of like Kyrie, Shumpert, Kevin Love, LeBron, and either Tristan or Mozgov, where LeBron is playing the four and being a force inside the paint, and allowing Shump or J.R. Smith or Kevin Love or Kyrie, you know, to have that space on the outside on the perimeter where they really thrive. So I think it's a mix of both. I think he is settling. And Evan, to your point, I think absolutely. There are a lot of times where he's just in the back of his mind saying, you know what, I just want to protect my body. I want to take it easy. I'll take a few shots down the lane every game, especially early on in the year. And if you do watch him in the big games, he tends to attack more in those bigger games and go for higher percentage looks. So, but you're right, Mike. I mean, when a guy like Jose Calderon is guarding him, it's frustrating to watch LeBron stand there and dribble for, you know, 20 seconds and throw up a fadeaway jumper.
Yeah, and it's just the matchup is usually what makes me mad, because he'll attack Kristaps Porzingis or Melo, but Calderon will be on him and he'll throw the jumper up, and it's like, why? You have all the size on this guy and you're going to attack the one who's your size or bigger.
Yeah, no, totally agree.
Let's understand the back issue too. That's, I think, everyone saw that clip, I'm sure, that ESPN played 100 times and is all over the internet. I saw it all over Twitter where he kind of just walked past Kevin Love on the ground, and that's why I was just like, oh, yeah, no, his back hurt. That's why he didn't help him up right there.
Yeah, and I love the idea that immediately people are saying, oh, man, there's trouble in paradise. Oh, LeBron and Kevin Love hate each other again or whatever. Like, yeah. I mean, that's, I've never seen a clearer example. The only thing to be concerned about that clip is like, wow, LeBron's back is that bad, huh? That's, okay, that's interesting. But
yeah, I was really surprised I didn't hear Love's about to demand a trade to the Lakers.
And that was, you know, that was our whole year last year. And, you know, for everybody that whined about that whole thing, well, LeBron didn't help him up, it was like a minute later in the game, Love hit a big three, and the first person over there to congratulate Love was LeBron. And, you know, so I think that kind of puts to rest, nobody reports on that, and ESPN didn't say a thing about that.
Of course not.
They just wanted to focus on, oh, well, hey, Kevin was on the ground, and he's your teammate, and you don't help him up, so they must still hate each other, and Love's going to opt out of his deal, whatever it may be. It's just, it gets to the point of ridiculousness. But let's go to a different level of ridiculousness here. The Golden State Warriors are, you know, and I said this in our preview show, and Mike and I have talked about it, and Evan, I'll be interested to hear your thoughts on it. Golden State, there's one reason I'm encouraged, and there's one reason I'm discouraged. Number one, I'm discouraged because right now they're being coached by Luke Walton, of all people. Luke Walton. And they're like playing the best that any team in the history.
Old camp's great right there.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, we used to have to watch Luke Walton start at the three for us. But, you know, they're playing better than any team like in NBA history right now. I mean, their start to the season has just been absurd. Here's where that actually encourages me, and I just can't get this out of my head. They were statistically, if you look at the advanced stats and metrics, they were one of the best teams in the history of the NBA last year. One of the most efficient, one of the highest scoring, one of the best defensive. All of those advanced stats, when you look at it, they were right up there in the top five. Okay, the Cavs took them to six games in the finals, and they were without Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, and still took them to six. And so the one thing that, even though they're playing well, and I get real nervous about that, the one thing that I keep in my head is, if this team is healthy, when Kyrie's back and Love is back and LeBron's playing, and everybody's clicking on all cylinders, and we get back to that team that was 30-3 in their last 33 games together, I think this team can be as good as that team is playing. What do you think, Evan?
No doubt, and it's interesting because I'm watching this Warriors team, and it is terrifying. I mean, Steph Curry's playing at a level where you have to. I mean, I'm racking my brain, and NBA coaches and fans around the league are trying to figure this out. How do you possibly stop Steph Curry? Because it seems like the only way you stop the guy is if he has a bad shooting day, and that's completely on him. Like, there's nothing you can really do to affect him. But all that being said, this Cavs team. When it's clicking at all cylinders, now that we'll have a year under their belt. And now, I think the biggest revelation about what happened in the playoffs when Kyrie, when Love was out, obviously after Boston, and Kyrie goes out, all the injuries that plagued this team was that they found a defensive identity that they can go to when things aren't going well with their offense. I mean, right now, only five games in, but they have the number one defensive rating in the league. And I anticipate that, you know, they shouldn't fall below top 6, 7, 8 all season. And hopefully they can ratchet that up once the playoffs come around as well. It'd be important, obviously, to keep that up when Kyrie comes back because he's not the greatest defender, but he's very athletic and if he gives the effort, he can do it as well. And I think that's the biggest key here is that the Cavs offense is very, very efficient. Anytime you surround LeBron at the four with shooters and a mop-up guy, able to rebound the ball at center, their offense is going to be devastating. The thing is, can they slow down Golden State? And when this team is completely healthy, I think they have a few guys they can throw at Steph and really bother them. And that's really the key to any series with Golden State. I mean, they're playing at a higher level than they were last year. Steph's even said they're better than they were last year. But I'm confident that they have no one that can cover LeBron. We have no one that can cover Steph. But I like our chances in that matchup because LeBron's still the best player in the world. And he can do it more ways than Steph Curry can.
And Mike, I know how fond you are of the way that the Spurs operate, and you know the line that you've given in a couple of podcasts before, the kind of Spursian effort that they give. What's scary about this Golden State team, and let me know if you agree or disagree, I think they're playing at a Spursian level right now with the talent that they have. I don't really think they played that way last year. They had stretches of it, but right now their efficiency and their ball movement is off the charts, and it presents huge problems.
It's incredible, but you can't think what they're doing right now is sustainable. Like, they're going to be great. They're going to win. I mean, the thing that kind of scares me right now is how all offseason no one talked about them. And they kind of, and I'm sure Steve Kerr did, push down the nobody believes in us even after a one thing down their throat, and they're taking it to heart because Steph Curry's PER right now is like 48 when the league average is 15. Which is, like, it's incredible. What? Like, yeah, it was like it's 60 at one point during this season. I at least hope you can't keep up the shooting he's doing right now for an entire season. I think that, though, the thing that they have going for them is the experience, and I think as the season goes on, the Cavs are going to equate that. And the way they beat us in the finals was going small, and I really think we can kill their small ball lineup by putting a lineup of Kyrie, JR, Shump, LeBron, and Kevin Love on the floor, because there is no way to stop that lineup offensively. There's absolutely no way.
Yeah, that's absolutely certain.
Especially the way that Kevin Love is playing right now on offense, because he's involved always somehow. He's running off of screens if he's not setting the screen for the pick and roll. He's moving constantly. He's not just sitting in the corner like last year.
You know, the one thing that gives me hope, you know, I keep thinking back to the finals. I thought Blatt did a phenomenal job of containing Steph in the finals.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Steph didn't beat us. Steph Curry did not beat the Cavs in that series. It was more Andre Iguodala. I thought David Lee off the bench gave them a huge spark that nobody saw.
Yeah.
But, you know, everybody's going in saying, okay, Steph Curry, it's the big stage, here we go. And you know, he played well, but he wasn't the Steph Curry that we're seeing at the beginning of this year. So, again, to me, that comes down to coaching. And Evan's right. You know, there's no one player that can stop Curry, but you can scheme it so that he's very uncomfortable. And yeah, and so that's what, you know, I'm hoping that as the season progresses, you know, I don't really mind what Steph is doing right now, and it doesn't bother me. If he keeps doing this and sustains this level of play, well, then he's going to have the best season that any player's had, like, in the history of the NBA, at least any guard in the modern era of basketball. And I don't think that's happening. So, you know, allow them to play as well as they can now and hopefully get it out of the way. But I want to turn to you guys, and we'll start with you, Evan. Some other teams out in the West, and we did our Hardwood podcast on hardfoulsports.com. You were nice enough to have me join a lot of the Buffalo guys, the Tonawanda guys, I should say. And, you know, we gave our predictions and we talked about the West, but I want you to do it for the folks here in Cleveland. You know, you look at San Antonio, Oklahoma City, the Clippers, Houston. There are a lot of teams that certainly have the ability to contend. The Spurs, you know, the Golden State. I'm sure I missed two or three. I'm just doing this off the top of my head. Evan, who do you think, other than Golden State, are the biggest threats specifically for the Cavs in the West?
In the West, there's a clear big five, and Memphis is a sixth team that's kind of like there. They're very good, but I don't think they're really any sort of threat for Cleveland. Cleveland always destroys them. What the weirdest matchup quirks you'll ever see. They beat them by 30 every time. But with besides Golden State, obviously, you got the Clippers, you got OKC, you got San Antonio, and then you got Houston. And Houston is, you know, has not started well, but I think they have enough depth in their lineup, and they have enough firepower where they'll be able to, you know, match up with whoever else in the West. And then if they come out, it'll be a tough matchup for Cleveland. In terms of those teams, though, I think the only team I'm really afraid of as a Cavs fan is, I mean, Golden State. They've already done it before, and they have the you know, Steph Curry, who's playing like the best player in the league and playing at a level what we haven't seen in a long time, and San Antonio, honestly, because of Popovich, such a great coach, and because of their 3-point shooting, and because of, you know, just Duncan is just so hard to deal with in the low post. With the Spurs, though, I'm curious about what you guys think and how much, you know, how much you've seen of them. But it seems like, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge is not getting anywhere near as much touches, and they were saying all offseason that they'd be able to incorporate him into their offense, but it's, you know, it's been a really slow start. And I wonder, because he's not of that same type of, you know, Spurs mentality of the whole all-in thing where they're just all so selfless. And I wonder, I mean, I'm sure they'll work it out, but that's like a weird quirk in their lineup and quirk with San Antonio. Like, they're such a good team, but I wonder if adding him kind of might have screwed up their offensive mojo a little bit.
Arnie?
The quote that Popovich actually said about Aldridge is that he's passing up too many open shots right now. And, I mean, I have faith in anyone that Popovich wants to bring in for their culture, because he got Steven Jackson to play for them.
That's a great point. Captain Jack, that's right.
but I guess I want to go through, I guess you're talking the big five. Houston doesn't worry me. Harden's game doesn't really translate to the postseason where you can be more physical, because he's all about drawing contact and getting fouls. To me, I just have trouble watching him. The Clippers don't worry me, because who on that team is going to guard LeBron? They don't have an answer for him at all. Is it going to be Lance Stevenson? The Warriors, obviously. Spurs, I will always be worried of the Spurs. It's an even year, so I think it's like the Spurs' turn to win it. And who is the fifth team that I'm forgetting?
Okay, Oklahoma City, and that's you know,
that's health. But I think that, one, I mean, Deion Waiters.
That's all you need to say.
I said the same thing on the Buffalo podcast. Same thing.
Yeah. A lot of people think Enes Kanter is a good player because he puts good box score numbers up, but he is the worst defensive big man statistically in the NBA.
He's bad. He's
really sound bad. Familiar, Evan? Sound familiar?
It does. It does. Oh, man. I just, you know, with OKC, I've never really feared them. And I'm sorry, my old days, I shun now, are going to come up. But even when LeBron was on the Heat, I always thought, because I think in a one-on-one matchup, LeBron is just going to beat Kevin Durant. I know Kevin Durant's going to get his points, but there's he can't guard LeBron, and they have no one on their perimeter who can guard LeBron. It's a similar issue which you talk about with the Clippers. And you know, Russell Westbrook's a problem, but I think Kyrie can match him. So then, what does that leave? That leaves Kevin Love going up against, you know, Serge Ibaka as a tough, maybe defensive matchup for him. But in terms of a well-rounded team, the Cavaliers are so much well-rounded than OKC is. Like, the thing about this that scares you about them is that, you know, Westbrook and Durant could go off for a combined 80 points any game, but that's not going to happen all that often, and especially not in a final series where the defense gets ratcheted up. So, yeah, I mean, I think the only two really big threats, I mean, we're saying this five games into the season, so maybe a little premature, no doubt, but I mean, it's the Spurs because they just scare me because that championship experience, and with OKC, excuse me, with Golden State because they've proven it. They've proven that they can do it, and Steph Curry is an alien, so that's a little hard to deal with.
Well, that's, you know, Golden State obviously is a team to beat. Until somebody beats them, they're the world champions, and, you know, certainly now they're playing better than anybody else in the league. Oklahoma City, you know, and I said this on the Buffalo podcast, and Mike, it's interesting. You said the exact same things. We're on the same wavelength with them. Cantor sucks. He is not as good as they value him to be. And you know, if they were to match up with a team like the Cavs, they'd get eaten alive in the front court. Just eaten alive. From a rebounding standpoint, they'd be eaten alive. You know, from the people that we can throw at them, if we wanted LeBron to play the four, if we wanted Kevin to play inside with Mozgov, with Tristan, I mean, that wouldn't even be, it wouldn't even be fair in the front court. Now, they could hang, like you said, you know, depending on the production of Westbrook and Durant, but I think of all the teams in the West, they have two things that are really, really concerning going against them. One, I think they have the least depth out of those five teams that we talked about. And number two, they have a rookie head coach. And, you know, I like Billy Donovan. I liked him at Florida. But you just don't know making that college transition to the NBA. We talked about David Blatt not being a rookie last year, but that's because David coached at a professional level overseas and won, you know, professionally in his leagues overseas. He won in the Olympics. You know, he basically, any team that he had at the professional level played well. When you're talking about a guy like Donovan, you know, he had, you know, two national championship teams in college basketball. He's a good college basketball coach, but I can tell you that most of the really good college basketball coaches, minus the Krzyzewskis and the Bill Selfs and the Roy Williams, and I almost might put Self in this category, they're good because they recruit better than anybody else.
Yep.
They're recruiters. They're not, you know, they're not great game coaches. And in the NBA, you don't have to be a great X's and O's guy in the NBA to win, but what you do have to do is manage grown men and their personalities over an 82-game season and a lot of months. And, you know, Donovan, it'll be interesting to see how that translates because, you know, I think he was a motivational guy. He came from the Rick Pitino school at Florida. And, you know, when he had good players, he won. But when he didn't have good players, he didn't win. But the thing about him is he always played, if it was a big game, no matter how much talent he had, he always played well or coached well. His teams played well in big games. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I just think he needs a little bit of time. And time is not a luxury that they have right now because of the whole contractual situation with Durant and Westbrook together. So I think of the five teams, they have the most question marks. A lot of people are really high on the Clippers, and I'm not. I've never been a huge DeAndre Jordan fan. I think he's good. I don't think he's as good as people say. Chris Paul's on the back end of his career, but I mean, he's still very good for what they ask and what they want him to do. But other than that, you know, I'm not as sold on the depth of the Clippers as others. And if Doc is going to continue to play Austin Rivers over the likes of Paul Pierce, like he did the other night, well, then I'm not scared of them really at all. And then, you know, you look at the Spurs, you asked about Aldridge. If there's one thing, you know, that I know about Greg Popovich, I don't want to say that he wants bad things to happen early in the year, but he wants to find out, part of his early season is finding out the weaknesses of his own team. And so, you know, believe me when I say he's taking notes right now about, all right, what Aldridge is doing and where he's comfortable and how he's performing and all of those different things. And by the time we get to the playoffs, he'll use him in the most efficient manner possible. And then you have Houston, and I'm, again, right on the same wavelength with Mike Arnold on this. And I think Mike Arnold's the first person that I've ever heard say this, what I've actually felt, and I haven't been man enough to say it. It's hard for me to watch James Harden play.
Oh, it's really basketball, man.
It is. It's hard. And you know, I don't think the rest of their team, I mean, okay, I don't think McHale's a great coach. He's good, but not great. I don't think he puts him over the top. And, you know, they've had a rough start. Will they make the playoffs? Sure. Can they make a run in the playoffs? Yes. Are they a title contender where I think they can make the NBA Finals from the Western Conference and or win the NBA Finals this year? I don't think that that they're at that point yet.
In the NBA, like, you're only going to go as far as your alpha dog is going to take you. And that's why you see, I mean, you can go back, what, 20, 30 years. I mean, besides that Pistons team in 04, every single team has had a Hall of Fame basketball player on every single championship team has had a Hall of Fame basketball player on it. It's you got to have that type of guy with the right mentality to win in the postseason. And with Harden, I mean, he's a great, great player. I mean, he'll probably make the Hall of Fame. Everybody makes the Hall of Fame in basketball, but he's gonna have a great career, and he's a good player. But I just wanted his mentality in the playoffs. And Mike, you made a great point about he's just way too reliant on trying to get to the free throw line. That's how he makes up a lot of his points because, you know, Houston, they got the whole analytics thing. Daryl Morey, their GM, one of the first upper management guys in the NBA to kind of really embrace that, and they're all about getting to the rim and taking threes. The mid-range game just doesn't exist. And Harden is just the personification of that mentality. But when those threes aren't falling and he's going to the rim, he's getting a hit and he's not getting many foul calls, he starts to pout and he gets really frustrated. And all of a sudden you see him on the bench during their game six comeback last year against the Clippers. Like, it's just it's a weird mentality with him, and that's I tend to dismiss him too. And we haven't brought up Dwight Howard. He's not the same guy as he used to be, and he has that
playoff Dwight is though. Playoff Dwight is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he has that kind of childish mentality as well, but he's obviously a great player, but I'm not, he's just not a lot to scare you there. And as long as the Cavs are healthy, like, it's really only the Spurs because of the experience and because of Steph Curry on Golden State to fear those two teams. The other three, I mean, they'll be tough series, no doubt, harder than the East series, no question, but I feel good about those series.
Real quickly, Adam, are you a Chris Paul fan?
Yes.
why that station?
Not a huge fan, but yes.
Would you build a team around him?
Right now?
In general, because one of your big mellow things last time we recorded was that he hasn't gotten out of the second round of the playoffs.
I knew where this was going.
Same thing with Chris Paul.
No, you're right.
I don't like Chris Paul. He's a great player. I just hate watching him play because he complains so much. He'll, like, get a reach-in foul and take a three-quarters court shot and then argue for a minute with the ref that he was trying to shoot the entire time. Like, it's just – I just can't stand people like that.
Yeah, I'm with you there, and that's kind of why I had that hesitation. I like – if you hold him strictly to his game, I like his game. I do like his game.
He should have won one of Nash MVPs.
Yeah, and that – to me, that – would I build a team around him? No. Would I take him? Yes, I'd take him before I'd take Melo. But you're right. I mean, the one thing I will say about Chris, I had the chance to, and this is a story, I guess, for the end of the podcast here. We went to the 2007 NBA Finals. A friend of mine from Western New York and I drove over to Cleveland. And the friend that I went with, he and I played basketball together in high school. He's a huge Cavs fan, too. His uncle was roommates with Jeff Van Gundy in college.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, he and I went on StubHub or whatever, and this is game four, Spurs and Cavs, the game that the Spurs clinched.
I'm sorry.
And yeah, it was painful to be there. But we,
I was at game six last year, so.
Yeah, it's tough. We spent, I think, $300 a ticket, and we sat in the second-to-last row up in the corner. I mean, just way up there. It was so expensive. But anyway, we made the trip. And so my friend Zach goes down and he says, I'm going to try to see if I can find Jeff Van Gundy and yell out my uncle's name. And the usher actually let us walk down, and he yelled out his name. And Jeff, we got to stand by Jeff in the pregame and in the postgame when the Spurs, they had the stage out on the court, and they're doing the title presentation and all that stuff. And I'm standing next to it, I kid you not, I'm standing on my right shoulder is Patrick Ewing. On my left shoulder is David Stern, who I'm 5'11", and David Stern doesn't even go up to my shoulder. it's not the NBA players that make him look short. Like, he's actually really short. And in front of me was Chris Paul. And Chris, you know, he and LeBron are tight. And my friend Zach loves Chris. And Chris was very, very nice. I expected him to be kind of a prick. Like you said, by the way that he acts on the court and all that stuff. And he was great. He was very accommodating. He took a picture with my friend. I'm a moron. I passed up a picture with Chris Paul because I saw Romeo Crennel at the game.
Oh my goodness.
Said, I gotta go get a picture with Romeo. And Romeo, by the way, he was really, really nice. And he did take the picture with me, and a year later he was fired. So Zach,
he's probably so nice because he's like, oh, you pass up Chris Paul, take a picture with me? Sure, yeah.
But that's actually, and Mike Arnold, you'll appreciate this, and I don't want to bore our listeners, but I think our Cleveland fans will like this. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, I got seats from Dan Gilbert. And so I went actually with my aunt who lives near Cleveland, and we're sitting on the baseline in the first row right by the Cavs bench, like 2 seats down from Dan. And so we're watching the game, and the experience was great, but they took us up to Dan's suite at halftime to kind of, I guess, mingle with all the people in his suite. So we go up to the suite, and there were 2 Browns players at the time that were at the game, and I got my picture with both. The first was Trent Richardson, who, you know, at the time we thought was just going to be a stud, and he was okay. You know, he said, yeah, I'll take a picture. The second, and you're not going to believe this, was the nicest athlete I've ever met in my entire life, Greg Little. Greg was up in the box, and I felt bad because at the time, you know, I was, I don't know if it was either fake Pat Shermer or it was SC Cleveland, but I would rip him on Twitter. And so I just kind of went up, and I'm like, hey, Greg, how you doing? And he took a picture with me, and then he started talking to me about St. Bonaventure and how long it took me to get to Cleveland and how I have season 2. He was so nice, and I just felt terrible. That whole night, I'm like, oh, my God, I've been ripping this guy to shreds. And, you know, he's like one of the nicest people ever. So it just goes to show you, like, with athletes, you know, it depends on where you catch them, because I've heard other stories where Greg was not a nice guy at all to some people. But I think being in Dan Gilbert's suite kind of helped it out a little bit. They were very respectful and nice. But it's just interesting that you catch, like you said with Chris Paul, I can't stand to watch his mannerisms on the court, but off the court, certainly at that game, he was a very, very nice guy.
That was a great story.
I just droned on for 5 minutes.
No, that was great.
And I'm just thinking about all those Greg Little tweets, too. Like, I've read all of those.
I felt terrible. Like, my conscience was really going after me. But, you know, he is a nice guy. All right, so last question, and then we'll wrap it up here.
I might have one too, depending on what your question is.
Well, I hope you
probably
do.
Be different questions. So.
Well, we've got plenty of time. So, in your heart of hearts, the question that I had is, and we did this on the Buffalo podcast. So, Mike, this is an opportunity for you to do it. If we're looking all the way down and everything works out and everybody's healthy on every team, who do you see in the finals this year, and what's the final result?
I said Cavs over Spurs in 6, but I already want to change it to Cavs over Warriors in 7.
Cavs Warriors.
I think our offense is going to be, like, by the end of the year, we're going to be so good. Like, I thought we would really stumble out the gate right now, and we're 4-1, and we are playing incredible defense. And when, like, without Shump, who is, I mean, he locked down All-Star starter Klay Thompson in the finals. I mean, he locked Jimmy Butler down. He locked, I mean, no one really important from Boston down, but I mean, he's a great man-on-man defender. So our defense is only going to go up, and we have just, I mean, 3 of our best 6 players still coming back the way we're playing right now. So,
all right, so he says Cavs over the Warriors in 7. Evan?
Not sound like a broken record, but I agree with him and with about the teams and about the games. I think, yeah, Cavs over Warriors, maybe in six. It all depends on who gets that home court advantage. It would be it's a little harder to, you know, win it that way. But
Cavs won't have it.
Yeah, that's yeah, you can actually probably throw that the way. The Warriors probably win 70 games this year in the way they're playing. But yeah, I'll go. Yeah, I think Cavs over Warriors in six or seven, and it's as simple as, you know, we saw that series last year with LeBron not shooting that well, without Kevin Love, without Kyrie Irving for the remaining five games, and they still took him to six. And it's, I think there's definitely, I think the Warriors have definitely improved. I think they had definitely had a little bit of stage fright, them being in their first finals and playing against LeBron. I had a lot of pressure on them, and now they're, you know, coming back with that championship experience. But I think having a healthy, and hopefully a healthy Kyrie and Kevin Love should no doubt take this team over the top. And I think with LeBron, it's always with LeBron, it's a weird thing to say, but less is more. When he's not having to take every shot, when he's not having to initiate every single play on the offense, when you can just, when you can, you know, delegate to other people, and then LeBron can come in and just be a force of nature when it you know, it suits him, when it suits the game situation, is when he's the most effective. So it's, you know, that's going to be a really fun series. If it does happen, I think the Cavs will be able to get their revenge this year.
By the way, I have to laugh. I don't know if you could hear that in the background. A matter of full disclosure, we're recording this during the Browns game, and that shows you how low my expectations are with the Browns, because normally I don't miss a snap, but it's kind of on in the background, and I don't know if you could hear in the background the you've got to be effing kidding me from my father, who's been a Browns fan for 60 years downstairs. What happened was, the Browns had a stop in the red zone, and of course they jumped off sides on a third down penalty or third down play, where they got the stop. They prolonged the drive, and then Cincinnati, of course, scored the touchdown on their next play. So, just so Browns. That's what it's like to be a Cleveland fan. And thank God that we can talk about the Cavs. You know, because it gives us something positive to look forward to. My finals prediction. Then we'll get to Arnie's question. Cavs over Warriors in six. So, Mike Arnold, take it away.
And I'm going to remind you guys that this award is so narrative-driven before you give your question, or before you give your answer, but who do you think is going to win the MVP this year?
Ah, this is the same question that that they posed on the Buffalo podcast, and I don't know, Evan, you might have picked, there was somebody I think that picked him with me, I said Steph Curry. And my reasoning for that, Arnie, is that, you know, I think the Cavs, the way that they're going to play this year, the way that they're going to manage minutes, I don't think LeBron will have the stats to back up an MVP this year. You know, and certainly if he wants to, he can do that. But I think he's really buying into the team first, the David Blatt approach, that we got to get a championship before anything else. And if they continue to share the ball the way that they have, LeBron isn't going to put up 30 points a night, which is fine by me. You know, save that for the playoffs when we need it. But on the other hand, Golden State, the way that they're playing, and again, right now they're the best team like ever in the history of the sport, but they'll come back down to earth. But in order for them to be successful, they need Curry to be a 30-point-a-night guy. You know, they want him taking just about every shot imaginable, and so he's going to have a lot more opportunity to score. And again, now this can change. If LeBron decides at any point this year, hey, I want to be the MVP, well, then he's going to go into LeBron mode, and the Cavs will suffer a little bit from a team perspective, but he can try to get his MVP. But I said Curry.
I was the fool to not say, one of the four fools to not say Steph Curry, and after the first five games of the season, it's looking a little foolish to pick anybody else. I said James Harden, and I'm gonna, you know, change my pick. I'm gonna change it to Steph, honestly, and it's not reactionary based on how poorly Harden's played. I'm sure he's gonna get it going, and you know, Houston will probably end up getting their 50 to 55 wins or whatever. But the way Curry's playing, and the thing about Steph is that he, it's so easy for him to get his shot. Like the main advantage is not that he's such a great shooter, is that he's a great shooter off the dribble. So if he's incredibly hard to defend, because at any moment, if you decide to step up to play that shot, he will drive right by you. He's a great passer, so he'll find somebody to create. So it leads you to play off because you don't want to give up the so-called easier shot near the basket, and all of a sudden he's draining a 25-foot three-pointer over your head. So it's with Steph, it's just so easy for him to get his numbers and the way that team is playing. And talk about how it's a narrative-driven thing. I think I totally expect Golden State to win, 65 games, this year. If not more. I mean, I think it's maybe a little ridiculous to say they'll push the Bulls' record, but they're going to be super, super hard to beat all season because their team made it the regular season with their depth. Man, Steph Curry is just he's a phenom. He's a phenom in every way, and it seems like the only way you slow him down really is because one of his Klay Thompson having a great day or Harrison Barnes having a great day, so he feeds them the ball instead. But when he wants to get his, he's just unstoppable. And with LeBron, I kind of think he's done winning MVPs for his career because he's thinking about the long range. And I know it's gonna be hard for Blatt to do this. It's gonna be hard for LeBron to do this to himself. But I think it's in the Cavs' best interest that he plays less games, he plays less minutes. That they're able to delegate and they're able to get other players comfortable in their roles, so they're ready once playoff time comes around. Like this whole season, just an 82 game boot camp to get ready for what is the real test in the playoffs. So, I mean, LeBron doesn't really need to exert himself that way anymore for them to win. So I don't think he will, and that's a smart play for him. So, I mean, you saw Kevin Durant, you saw Westbrook out there. There's a lot of great players out there, but Steph Curry is just so dominant.
Arnie, what do you think?
Well, Evan just called himself stupid for not saying Steph Curry, so I guess I'm stupid right now. But it's just so hard to repeat it as the MVP of the NBA because it's such a narrative-driven award, and it's so weird in the way it is. But like I don't think it's possible for Steph to keep up his 48 PER right now. I think he'll come back in the 20s. And I think it's kind of gonna be like when Derrick Rose won his MVP in 2011, and he just didn't deserve it. Like that should have been LeBron's award, and I'm probably admitting that for the first time right now. but yeah, my pick at the beginning of the year was Anthony Davis, and I'm just not seeing it out of Anthony Davis right now. And granted, his entire team is just mangled, but I could see the Cavs cruising to the one seed. I thought we were gonna stumble out the gate. We're not. LeBron is still averaging 22-7-5.5 right now, even though he's off to kind of a slow start. And I think that our record is going to be probably going to be in the mid to high 50s by the end of the year, and that'll be the entire story is going to be LeBron carried us to the one seed. LeBron carried us to the one seed, and he's going to get votes because he's LeBron. And I think it'll be his last year to win one.
Interesting.
Well, I think it's a really interesting call. Honestly, I just don't think he's going to play enough.
Like, it's impossible. It has to be. Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, Steph's going to regress. Like, this is ridiculous, the way he's shooting. But he's shot 40% to 50% from three, four is the past few years. And now he's shooting more of them than ever. He's shooting, he shot 11 threes last night when they played, the Clippers. Like, he's just shooting so many threes, and he's just so good at it, and I don't know what you do to stop that. And his point numbers are going to be ridiculous. And it's just, people love the Warriors right now. You talk about narrative driven league. Like, I think people still just love the Warriors, and they love to kind of maybe not take LeBron's accomplishments because the way they look. Once again, like, LeBron is just this hulking monster of a player, and Steph Curry is 6'2", and he looks like weighs about 180 pounds soaking wet, and it's just, you kind of don't expect him to be that dominant, and people just love Steph Curry. So even if he regresses, I think he'll still be able to take it. But I like your case for LeBron, though.
Well, let's admit it. I mean, and Arnie, I don't know how you feel, but I'll admit it right now. If LeBron didn't come back to Cleveland, and let's say we were watching the Warriors take on the Heat, a LeBron-led Heat team, I would be the biggest Warriors bandwagon fan ever. Because they have a team that's fun to watch. They're in a city that doesn't get to win a lot. I think they have a phenomenal fan base. That arena is just a bear to play in.
Love it.
So, I mean, they're fun to – and I think you get – exactly what you just said, Evan. The people, the anti-LeBron people, you know, number one, it's easy enough to root against him. But when you put a team like Golden State out there to root for against him, it makes it very tough. Now, luckily, we're on the side where we have LeBron, so we have an opportunity to win a title. And I do still think that there are some people that root for Cleveland because we are such an underdog. We haven't won anything since 1964, and you know, we've had just about every heartbreaking way to lose that you can imagine. So, yeah, it'll certainly be interesting to see how it all unfolds. And as I say unfolds, that means we hit the one-hour mark of our Cavs podcast. Easy to talk about the Cavs for a long time because there's a lot to talk about, and there's a lot positive to talk about, and we really don't have anything else in the city of Cleveland from a sports perspective that positive to talk about. So I want to thank Evan Sally from Hard Foul Sports for joining us, and he's going to continue to join us on these Cavs podcasts, which of course...
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, we'll keep these up throughout the year. Mike Arnold, always a pleasure, and don't get too down on the Browns. I know you're trying not... Are you even watching?
Not right now. I'll watch the second half, but...
Don't even do it, man.
Last Sunday, just... I mean,
don't even do it. Save yourself. If I were there, I'd take you out to eat or something right now because it's not worth it. Trust me on that.
Come on, guys. Johnny's playing. And I'm like, you know, it's entertaining, right?
No.
Okay. All
no.
Right. I tried.
We've been punched in the gut so many times. But so for Evan Sally and for Mike Arnold, this is Adam Bennett. We will see you next time. This has been the Hard Foul Sports Cleveland podcast on hardfoulsports.com.